Hotline, great conversation always. He's my co-host on the Eyes on Texas bi-weekly multicast that we do. New episode is out recapping the TCU game where Mike Craven was live in person to see the Texas Longhorns play the TCU Horned Frogs. He is also the senior writer at Dave Campbell's Texas Football. Craven, how are you, bud?
Doing pretty good, guys. How are y'all?
Doing good.
Doing good. All right, real quick before we get to the trash talk and Iowa State and the coaching carousel, what were your takeaways from seeing Texas in person on Saturday night at Fort Worth, 29-26 victory?
Yeah, kind of a tale of two halves for two straight weeks. I mean, just completely dominant in the first half, up by 20 points, doing everything that they wanted to do. The defensive line is just so nasty. They were dominating TCU. And then it looked like in the second half, Texas just kind of took their foot off the gas, right? I mean, the defense played a little bit simpler, and I think that allowed the redshirt freshman quarterback, Josh Hoover, to have easier reads to make it look a little bit more like practice. He didn't have as much pressure. And then, obviously, Savion Williams started making plays. He's a really good football player. But one of the things I think we've noticed of the Texas team over the first 10 games is the offense kind of goes to sleep a little bit. I mean, there's been spots in multiple games now where they've gone a quarter or a whole half, really struggling. They only scored 3 points there against TCU. So we'll see what the adjustments are moving forward, but they're going to have to figure that out. As Sark said after the game, they're going to need 4 quarters at some point this year to close this thing out and win a Big 12.
Yeah, it's interesting. What are your thoughts, Mike, about the injury to Jonathan Brooks? I mean, seeing this team, that's probably been the MVP offensively for Texas, and now without Jonathan Brooks going on the road to Ames, facing one of the better defenses in the Big 12, and you got an injured quarterback. What are your thoughts about how the offense is going to look without Jay Brooks?
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. I mean, I think against Iowa State, it was always going to be hard to run the football, even if Brooks was there. I mean, obviously, him being there, gives them a better shot at that. This feels like one of those games where Quinn Ewers is going to have to throw the ball, and he's going to have to throw the ball a lot. And that doesn't have to always be downfield. It doesn't have to be, hugely difficult throws every single time. It may just be short passing game stuff to become the extension of the running play. Maybe they go jet sweeps. Maybe they get a little bit more creative with how they come up with an extension of the run game. So they're going to have to figure that stuff out and go east-west on Iowa State and get them moving and then beat them over the top.
Yeah, you would think. And, yeah, I mean, and as Rod has said, doing the scouting of Iowa State, they have a very good secondary. I mean, they really do. They got some good players back there. They're sound. So this will be a real challenge, and they do need somebody, whether it's C.J. Baxter, Savion Red, obviously, Jaden Blue. Someone's got to step in and step up because Jonathan has been so darn good, and you hate to see it. What a leader, what a player he's been for Texas this year. But someone's got to step up, and they do have to run the ball a little bit here, maybe even a lot of it, to get a win at Ames. Hey, Mike, the trash talk we were talking about, I'm sure you've seen it, this offensive lineman Rod came in as a former player befuddled, like, really, did they're trash talking you for the game? Like, when has this ever happened? You said to me on the multicast on Monday night that came out yesterday, you don't get this Iowa State program, but here they are trash talking Texas ahead of the final ever meeting.
Yeah, I don't understand where the confidence at Iowa State comes from. I mean, I know they're in the Big 12 mix. I know everybody loves Matt Campbell and thinks he's, like, going to get every single head coaching job that comes open. But you look at that schedule, you look at who they won, it looks a lot like Kansas State to me, where you're like, what's the big win? What is the good team that they've beaten? Texas has better athletes here. I mean, but I love WWE. I love wrestling. I like rap music. Like, I want more trash talk in college football. So I'm fine with coming out and saying it and getting some eyeballs there. It's going to make that matchup with him and Tavondre. So people are going to watch it. People are going to talk about it. Like, I think that's all good stuff there. Like, if Texas goes and wins 30 by 30 points against Iowa State, it's not because the guard was talking trash, right? And so I think it's fine. It'll be a talking point on social media more so than it's probably a talking point behind the scenes. And once the first drive happens, football starts and everything goes back to normal, and it's fine.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It's just a rare thing to hear Iowa State players talking trash to Texas, but we'll see if there's a reason for the confidence for Iowa State. Let me ask you real quick, since we're talking Texas, and we're going to move on to talk about the coaching carousel in a second. What have been your thoughts about the late game collapses by Texas on the defensive side? What have you seen that you think is going to be problematic for Texas? And do you think it's a personnel issue for Texas? Or are we talking about a coaching schematic issue for Texas?
I guess to me it feels like when they get these big leads, they get a little bit simpler on defense, and they almost kind of go into almost a two-minute type, don't let anything behind you, don't blitz as much, don't put out as much pressure, don't man up the receivers as much. And that just doesn't feel to be the character of this Texas defense. Like, they do their best work when they're allowed to go hunt, like when they're allowed to go downfield, be aggressive, play man up on the outside, like just be guys, right? And then in the two-minute offenses we've seen this year, they've struggled when they've been asked to be a little bit more bend but don't break. And so I think one of the adjustments for Kwiatkowski, and I think it's true on the offensive side of the ball as well, is just stay aggressive. Like, live up to that motto of all gas, no breaks. Like, do that for four quarters, because these teams can't stay on the field with Texas. Like, we've seen that when Texas is rolling, there is not teams in the Big 12 that can really stand with what Texas is doing. Kansas State couldn't. TCU couldn't. I don't think Iowa State can either. It's up to Texas to allow these teams in the game, either by letting off the gas schematically or doing some turnovers or making some special teams plays. And so maybe, you know, after a couple of weeks of hearing that and seeing that on film, you know, maybe this team is ready to go out and get that. But I remember that Bobby Bowden quote. I don't know if y'all remember Bobby Bowden talking about this, like the four-year cycle of coaching. Yep. Where you lose big the first season, you lose close the second season, you start winning close the third season, then you win, you know, big the fourth season. They're in that third season. They're winning close games. So they're just still figuring out how to win. Sark, you know, if they win on Saturday, this will be Sark's first 10-win season as a head coach. He's never played in a conference championship game. He's never won this many games. This is still new to a lot of players on the team and to the head coach. I think they're trying to figure out how to do it on the fly. The fact that they're winning these games, I do think, is a positive sign.
Agreed. We talked about that Bobby Bowden quote, but you do have to keep your foot on the gas, I believe, or it's going to come back to get you, and we'll talk about that. Mike Craven is a senior writer at Dave Campbell's Texas Football. He's been covering football in the state for his whole career, and so you woke up to the news of Jimbo Fisher, as we all did. You had to go cover that story and write for Dave Campbell's, but it's the first domino of many, and I know you and I have talked about it on the multicast, and I want your thoughts for our audience. I mean, there's a lot that could change with the coaches in the state of Texas as the dominoes fall. Jimbo Fisher and A&M likely just the first of many throughout the great state here over the next, you know, 3-4 weeks into December.
Yeah, it makes me tired thinking about what this next month or 6 weeks is going to be in the state. A&M obviously was the first domino. I think four or five jobs could open in terms of firings. You know, I think UTEP, Dana Dimmel is on the hot seat. I think many people believe that when that season is over, he's gone. Rice, if they don't get to 6-6, Mike Bloomgren's on his last year of his contract. They have a new athletic director, a new president. So the writing's on the wall there. And then, you know, you look at Houston, you know, Dana Holgorsen's kind of been on the hot seat more or less this year. You know, that big loss there to Cincinnati over the weekend kind of makes that one interesting. What's going to happen at Baylor with Dave Aranda? They don't want to buy him out. They don't want to fire him. But if they go 3-9, I don't know if the fan base is going to give them a lot of choice. And so there could be four or five openings from firings. And then you start looking at guys who are going to get poached. You know, I think Jeff Traylor is probably going to have a new job next year. I think this is probably going to be the last year he's at UTSA. You know, Frank Harris is going to, you know, ride off into the sunset after this season. And so it behooves Traylor to try to get a new job now before, you know, he's got to coach at UTSA without his star quarterback. G.J. Kinney at Texas State is a rising star in this industry. And, you know, I know he's only been there for 1 year, but if you look at G.J.'s resume, he's left a lot of places in a row after 1 year. I think six or seven spots, just one-year spots over the last 6 or 7 years. And so, and then Rhett Lashley at SMU with a couple SEC jobs opening up. He played quarterback at Arkansas. He's a high school legend out there. You know, that one's probably going to open. What happens there? So it could be a crazy year of some openings and then guys getting hired for different jobs. You know, there's usually only two or three openings a year in the state. I think there's going to be six, seven, maybe even eight.
Hey, Mike, let me ask you about the Aggie job, because that's the big one, right? That's kind of started up this coaching carousel. Who's your top three that you think are the best fits for that Aggie job, or that's being considered for that Aggie job?
Yeah, if it's me, I'm calling Dan Lanning and making him say no. You know, he's got SEC ties. He's been on the staff at Georgia. He's been on staffs at Alabama. He's winning at Oregon. He's young. He's a defensive-minded coach. I think A&M wants to get back to being the defensive-minded, blue-collar, wrecking crew type team, especially with Texas coming into the conference. They like being kind of that anti-hero, you know, to kind of Texas's flashiness. So I think that would be a perfect fit for him, but I don't know if they can get him away from Oregon. My other two would be Mike Elko, obviously, because of his time there as a defensive coordinator. He could keep a lot of that roster and that staff together because of his familiarity with it. And then my other one would be Jeff Traylor, like I talked about at UTSA. You know, their athletic director, Ross Bjork, on Sunday talked about wanting to find their next R.C. Slocum, a guy that could be there for a long time, that understood the culture. Well, find me a more East Texas man than Jeff Traylor, right? I mean, he won three state championships at Gilmer. He's 30-8 his last three seasons at UTSA. He's 25-3 in conference, 24-3 at home in his career. So all he does is win. And I know he hasn't done it at the Power 5 level, but when he was at Texas, he won Big 12 Recruiter of the Year, right? Like, the dude knows how to recruit. Kids love to play for him. He's had one of the best rosters in the G5 the last few years, and they don't get poached. You don't see a lot of those guys going elsewhere. And so I don't know if A&M will do it, because I think they may want the bigger hire or a P5 name like an Elko or a Lanning. But I think if they hired Jeff Traylor, he'd be a problem for the SEC, and he'd be a guy that was there for a long time.
Well, remember, R.C. Slocum, great point there. He came in after Jackie Sherrill, right? And Jackie mm-hmm. Sherrill and all the problems and, Jimbo Fisher, controversial, a lot of issues, not kind of a toxic environment in that locker room right now with him. And, you know, Mike Elko would certainly soothe some of that. But you, for folks who don't know, in addition to being the senior writer of Dave Campbell's Texas Football, Mike, also attended UTSA, so you follow that program maybe closer than most. What is it about Jeff Traylor that makes him such a good coach? I mean, in addition to everything you just said, what is it that makes him a fit there, and just what's he so good at?
Yeah, I think he's really good with people. He's a relationships guy. He reminds me a lot of Mac Brown, in that you meet him one time, he remembers your name, he remembers your life story. You can run into him again 6 months later, he'll ask you how your mom's doing and remember a little bit of nugget that you mentioned. Like, he's just dialed in. He's tuned in. He's just a ball coach, right? Like, I think we've been around enough coaches to know some of these guys are just built to be head coaches. Some of them are built to be position coaches or coordinators. And he is a CEO. He is a runner of a program. But he's also a really good X's and O's guy. And I think he just understands what makes a football program tick. And that's not the scheme. It's not the size of the players or the speed. It's the actual people and how they feel and if they want to go to work. I think TCU really solidified this to me last year. It was basically the same team that had been 500 under Gary Patterson. Sonny Dykes comes in there, and I don't think he did anything with the scheme. He just made the vibes better. He made everybody feel okay being in the locker room. Like, he was just a different cat than what they had been dealing with. And they started having fun. They started playing free. They started playing with confidence. And they go 12-0. They end up in the college football playoff. I think A&M's in a similar situation where they have all the talent in the world. Like, the talent's not an issue at A&M. They have all the resources. They have the recruiting. They have 105,000 people at every single game. They just need a guy that can go in there and make everybody feel good about being an Aggie. And they just haven't had that in a while. Their next hire needs to be that dude that can kind of, like, be a representative of the community, of the school, of the program, free everybody up, let them go have fun, let them go play football. I think Elko, Traylor, Lanning would be guys that could do that.
Hey, Mike, real quick before we let you go, what are your thoughts about the report that Quinn Ewers says a high likelihood of him returning to Texas for next season?
Yeah, I think that's a really smart, mature decision by him. I mean, I'll believe it when I see it, right? You know, like, I think if he plays really good down the stretch, Texas accomplishes all their goals, maybe he gets the first-round grade and he's gone. But to me, this would be a championship of NIL, right? Like, before NIL, this wouldn't even be possible. With NIL, you know, it allows somebody like Quinn Ewers to be more realistic about his body of work and go, hey, I don't have to decide between making some money or coming back to college and developing myself. I can make some money, come back to college, develop a little bit more, prove I can stay healthy, and then go be maybe the first quarterback taken in the 2025 or whatever that will be. I'm losing track of years now. 2025 NFL draft, if he came back, where it's not as loaded as this year. He's not going to get picked before Drake May. He's not going to get picked before Caleb Williams. At best, he's the third quarterback in this upcoming draft. And so, you know, I think it would be a good thing. It would show that NIL is working in a correct way, and I think it would be good for Quinn as well.
And you've covered Quinn since he was a recruit coming out of South Lake Carroll way back. Mike Craven, by the way, if you want to check out that Eyes on Texas multicast, our edition that dropped just yesterday, just find it where you find podcasts, iTunes and Spotify, also on the YouTube channel of The Horn. and on the YouTube channel of Dave Campbell's Texas Football, part of that Republic of Football network there on Dave Campbell's Texas Football, doing great work covering high school football, of course, with the playoffs cranking up. Now the coaching carousel, colleges all over the great state. No one does it better than them, and no one does it better than Mike. Mike, thanks so much, my friend.
Appreciate you guys. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Mike.
Mike Raven.